It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
I'm Jim Dolan. Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download, where we have an hour of great old-time radio. We're going to start off today with an episode of Suspense, and this is called The City That Was. It's from 1960.
Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The City That Was, written for Suspense by Richard Weil. When you need someone to do a specific type of job, you hire someone specially trained to do that job. After all, this is an age of specialization. But what you may not know is that right now, there are several hundred thousand men and women who have received special training and are searching for employment. Now, these folks, many of whom are veterans, have physical handicaps, which actually often makes them better able to fill specific jobs. Does that sound strange? Well, maybe so, but here's the explanation. These men and women, recognizing their shortcomings, have sought and received special rehabilitation and training in specific areas of work. They are highly skilled because they've been taught to make best use of the physical and mental abilities they possess. So if you're looking for help, contact your state employment service and ask about physically handicapped workers. Employing the physically handicapped is good business. It is now 50 years since the first motion picture was made amidst the orange groves of a sleepy little California village called Hollywood, and a latter-day gold rush began. Hollywood quickly became a sprawling, brawling boomtown, and true to the tradition of the Western frontier, a tradition it helped to create and has fondly fostered, Hollywood lived violently. And not a few of its citizens died violently, with and sometimes without their boots on. The stakes were high, worldwide fame, and undreamt of fortune. And the passions that poured onto the silver screen sometimes spilled over into private lives with lethal results. In a moment, The City That Was by Richard Weil. This Halloween, when your doorbell rings, give those little trick-or-treaters a treat they'll never forget. Snap their picture and give them a print. But before next Monday night rolls around, get several packs of Sylvania Blue Dot Flash Bulbs, the world's largest selling brand. Because only with flash can you catch all the fun and color of Halloween. Only with flash can you get all the clear, sharp details. What's more, flash bulbs work with any film, any time, day or night, anywhere, with any camera. So this week, when you're out shopping, be sure and ask for Sylvania Blue Dot Flash Bulbs. And also ask for your free 32-page flash guide book, designed by Sylvania to help you take better flash pictures. Remember, it's yours free with the purchase of only one pack of Sylvania Blue Dots. But hurry, the witches will be flying before you know it. So get your Sylvania Blue Dot Flash Bulbs today.
Hollywood of 35 years ago. There was a town for you. It flamed with color. It bubbled with intrigue. And it frequently simmered with sin. Gods and goddesses strolled the boulevard in those days and rode to the studio in their $20,000 custom-built Rolls Royces. It was the era of Valentino and Mabel Normand and Wallace Reed, of Barbara Lamar and William Desmond Taylor and William S. Hart, and the great vamps, Nita Naldi, Pola Negri, and Theda Bara. It was the era, too, of Anthony Kendall, matinee idol turned movie king, and his leading lady, Rena Schelfante, who used to be called the golden flame of the silver screen. You must remember them. And how they were tied up with the Korsakov killing? All the facts of that cor celebre were not told at the time, but they can be told now. And this is what really happened that rainy night in November, 35 years ago. Tony and Rena had finished a long day's shooting. It was nearly 7 o'clock when Tony tooled his big white Cunningham Roadster into the driveway of his Whitley Heights estate. He stopped the car under the arch of the entrance gate and was reaching for the electric control button when a masked figure with a gun stepped out from the darkness.
All right. Hold it right there.
Say,
what is this?
It's the end of the line for you, big shot.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Here's where your boyfriend gets what's coming to him.
Tony, it's Bart Malloy.
Now, that wasn't very smart to recognize me, Rena. Now, you go with him.
All right, Bart. Cut the melodrama. You're drunk. Now, go on home and sleep it off. I'll see you at the studio tomorrow.
There isn't going to be any tomorrow for you two. Because I'm going
to... Look out, Bart, behind you!
Let go of that gun, Bart. Let go of...
Oh, you don't. I said I'd kill you.
No, I say... That's better.
Now, I'll just unload it so nobody can get hurt. Here. You can have it back now. Now, go on home and get some shut-eye. I'll see you in the morning.
So you can fire me in front of the whole crew?
How did you know we were going to fire?
Not we, you. I heard all about it an hour ago. Alec Benson didn't want to let me out. You're the one who cut my throat. So you might as well call the cops and do the complete job on me.
I have no intention of calling the cops.
Why not? That would make your day perfect.
Now look, Bart. Suppose we forget all about this, hmm? All three of us. Right, Rena?
Of course.
Gee, that's big of you. Both of you. Maybe someday I can pay you back.
Now go on home, Bart. You need sleep.
Sure, that's all I need. Just a little sleep. And thanks, Tony. Thanks for everything.
Tony.
Yes, darling.
Would you mind driving me straight on home?
Well, what about dinner?
Oh, I don't feel much like eating now. I just want to go home.
All right. All right.
Tony. Tony, why did you put Barton on the picture in the first place?
He was on the skits. There wasn't a casting director in town who'd hire him.
You and your big heart. Don't you know that the surest way to make a man hate you is to do him a kindness?
Maybe. But he promised he'd go on the wagon.
So the first day, he showed up pink-eyed as a rabbit and chewing cloves to camouflage the smell of whiskey.
He's always chewed cloves as long as I've known him.
Sure he has. It's the trademark of an alcoholic. Tony, you know, he scares me.
Nah, don't be silly, darling. Bart may be lush, but he's not a murderer.
In just a moment, we will return for the second act of Suspense.
So people come in to me and they say, Otto, you were once a great chef. Because I am now selling meat in my butcher shop, one sometimes forgets I know lots about cooking meat, too. So I let you in on a little cooking secret of mine. French's Worcestershire sauce. Aha! Only French's Worcestershire has in it a collection of spices we Germans know accentuates the good flavor of meat. French's also has soy, anchovies, tamarinds. Ach, I could go on, but these ingredients do to everyday food. Mouth-watering. May I suggest you try this with pot roast? Add 1 tablespoon French's Worcestershire to each cup of gravy. Ach, would you believe the difference? With French's, you really spark up your meals. And people will say, my goodness, but you're a wonderful cook. Just as they used to say to me.
Oh.
course Bart Malloy didn't take Tony's advice and go home. The evening was still young, and in his misery he needed company. So he headed for Henry's on Hollywood Boulevard. Everybody went to Henry's in those days. It was packed every night with actors, directors, writers, producers, come to see and be seen, and to partake of Henry's wonderful turkey sandwiches, his fabulous German pancakes, and his fragrant coffee. Malloy is downing cup after cup of it now, each one generously laced with whiskey from his hip flask. Also, he's airing his grievances to Fritz, the friendly waiter who knows him well.
So, I take a drink. One measly drink.
Yeah.
And he tosses me off the picture. He's a louse, that's what he is. Star-spangled louse.
And nine, Mr. Malloy. Das ist nicht so. Mr. Kendall's a fine gentleman. A real fine gentleman.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something, Fritz. I'm going to fix your fine gentleman's wagon for him if it's the last thing I ever do.
Oh, you shouldn't say such things, Mr. Malloy, especially such a time as this. Just so soon as he's finished his picture, he and Miss Alfante will be...
Yeah, I know. Maybe I ought to figure out a nice present for him, huh?
Ah, that sounds better, Mr. Malloy. You know something? I always thought Miss Alfante would marry that Russian director... what is his name?
Korsakov.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sergei Korsakov, yeah. Sure were crazy about each other until Tony came along. Fritz.
Huh?
You may not know it, but you just gave me a terrific idea.
Bart Malloy lost no time in putting his terrific idea into action. First, he telephoned the director, Sergei Korsakov, and made a date to drop by his apartment later that evening. Then he called Rainer Schalfante and employed his not inconsiderable talent as a mimic.
Hello?
Hello, this is Hollywood 2749.
Yes, it is.
May I speak, please, with Miss Schalfante? I'm Dr. von Kesselring, Dr. Friedrich von Kesselring.
This is Miss Schalfante, Doctor.
I am Mr. Korsakov's physician, Miss Schalfante. I have, I regret to say, some unhappy news for you.
Well, is something the matter with Sergei?
He has suffered a coronary occlusion.
Oh, no!
Malloy counted on the rainy streets and the fact that Rena had to come all the way in from Beverly Hills to give him the time he needed with Korsakov. 5 minutes later, he pulled up in front of the Russian director's house high in the Hollywood Hills. Well, not exactly in front of the house, for it perched 60 feet above the streets and was reached by a private elevator which opened on the sidewalk. Very futuristic, a Hollywood showplace at the time, this hideaway of the mad Russian. Malloy pushed the bell. The elevator door clicked open. And a moment later, he stepped out of the cage into Sergei Korsakov's living room.
Hello, Sergei.
How are you, my friend? It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Is this a lousy night?
For me, it's perfect. I sit before the fire and I try to solve chess problems. You will have some tea? Over there is samovar.
Tea?
Also brandy, whiskey, vodka. Choose it for yourself.
Well, just a little one. You know, to cut the fog.
Good. Now, sit down and tell me why you call me.
Well, Sergei, I need some advice.
Well, I will be glad to...
It's like this. I'm going to come out of this picture I'm on with quite a bit of dough. You told me you'd been buying real estate, remember?
Well, I have quite a bit of property in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica, that's too far out. Like the San Fernando Valley. Can't tell me that people are ever going to go all the way out there. Hey, I thought you said you were going to be alone tonight.
I expect no one.
Maybe your luck is changing, huh, boy? Well, don't get up. I'll send the elevator back down. And I'll just slip out the service entrance.
But I assure you,
Bob... Yeah, I know. Probably your maiden aunt just in from Vladivostok. Just the same, I'll go out the back way so as not to embarrass the lady.
You have it a dirty mind, my friend. I would suggest that you... Bart, What does it mean? The gun.
I guess you might say it means goodbye, Sergei.
Malloy moved fast now. He wiped his fingerprints from the smoking gun and from the whiskey glass. Then he dropped the gun to the floor and headed for the service entrance. He was gone when the elevator stopped and Rena walked into the living room to discover Sergei's bullet-riddled body sprawled on the floor. When the police arrived, summoned by a neighbor who heard the shooting, they found her there, gun in hand, kneeling over the body, sobbing over and over.
Who did it, Sergei? Who did it? Who did it?
In a moment, we'll return for the third act of Suspense.
Hi, this is Dennis James with a longtime favorite. Yes, the longtime favorites are usually the best, aren't they? And one favorite folks have relied on over the years is Kellogg's All Brand, since 1919, America's favorite natural laxative cereal. Kellogg's All Brand is the safe, gentle way to overcome irregularity caused by lack of bulk in your diet. It tastes good, too, and it never gets mushy in milk. There's only one All Brand, Kellogg's All Brand. So relieve constipation the way millions do with Kellogg's All Brand. A-L-L-B-R-A-N. Yes, you're so right to stay regular with Kellogg's All Brand. Try it, okay? Okay.
They allowed Rena Chalfante one phone call. Naturally, she called Tony Kendall. But there wasn't much he or his attorney could do for her, since there's no bail on a murder charge. So Tony went to the scene of the crime, and there he found that an old friend of his was in charge of the investigation, Sergeant Kay of Homicide.
I'm sorry, Tony, but it just don't look good for your girlfriend.
But Rena is no killer.
That's not for me to say. I can only go by the evidence I find, and, well, it all points to her.
But where's the motive? Rena had no motive.
She might have.
What do you mean?
Well, this is just a theory, of course.
All right, all right. Let's have it.
You may not like it, Tony.
I told you. Go ahead.
Well, she and Korsakoff were, they were pretty good friends before you came along, right?
Yeah.
So maybe he's still in love with her. Maybe he doesn't want her to marry you. Maybe he threatens to do something to stop the wedding.
I see. And maybe she shoots him.
Right.
Wrong. Marty, Rena is not a killer.
Maybe, but it looks like she did it.
You've been all over the place, I suppose.
Stem to stern. And everything strictly copacetic, except for a whiskey glass with no fingerprints on it.
A what?
This one right here. See? Somebody had a shot of bourbon out of it and then wiped off the prints.
Now, wait a minute. Sergei didn't drink.
He didn't? Well, then maybe your girlfriend...
Here we go with that maybe routine again. Now, Marty, for your information, Rena isn't a drinker either. That samovar over there is more in her line.
Oh, so that's what you call that thing. What's it for?
We're making tea. Russian style.
Yeah, what's all this stuff in these little saucers?
Oh, lemon peel, cinnamon, rose petals, cloves. They put it in the tea.
All at once?
No. One at a time.
Oh. Well, then Korsakoff must have been a clove boy. We found a lot of them on the floor.
Clothes, And a whiskey glass.
Yeah. You got a theory?
Maybe I have.
What is it?
I'll let you know when I've proved it.
In just a moment, we will return for the concluding act of... Suspense.
You know, there are millions of motorists in this country. Most of them are careful, law-abiding drivers who are smart enough to know that it pays to be careful, but it takes only one careless act to cause a serious accident. So don't break the law of the road or the law of averages. Drive carefully, all the time. First of all, don't speed. More highway deaths are caused by excess speed than by anything else. Second, drive with your head as well as with your hands and feet. Use sound judgment in your driving and develop good driving habits. And finally, be courteous. Don't be afraid to give the other fellow a break. You'll both live longer. And here are a few pointers for safer driving. Pass the car ahead only when you're absolutely sure it's safe. Don't take chances. Always allow plenty of space between your car and the car ahead. At least one car length for every 10 miles per hour you're traveling. And at night, dim your bright lights when approaching another car. Now, by following these safety rules, you can help cut down on accidents.
Tony Kendall was in makeup and on the set at 8 o'clock the next morning. The cameras were in place, and the lights were all set up for the climax scene of Passion Lost, the big fight scene. Alec Benson, the director, greeted Tony with the long face usually reserved for funerals.
Tony, I just heard about Rena. What a terror.
All right, save your sympathy. She's innocent.
Oh, of course. But what's it going to do to our shooting schedule?
You're just chock full of compassion, aren't you?
Well, I mean...
I was the great man this morning.
Good morning, Bart.
Who's going to lower the boom? You or Alec?
Well, Bart...
I told you last night we'd forget all about it, Bart.
I thought you meant...
You're still on the picture, Bart.
But, Tony, I've already hired...
You heard me, Alec. Tony, I don't know what to say.
Let's save it.
Let's get on with the fight scene.
Okay. Now, this has got to top any fight scene that's ever been photographed.
Sam! I can't hear myself think! All right, you guys, pull them handles!
Now, we've got to make this brawl in the spoilers look like a chorus boys' picnic. Now, I want...
Look where you're going, knucklehead! Don't trip over those cables!
Will you please knock it off, Sam? You make more noise than the hammers.
Sorry, Mr. Benson.
Now, let's get the suspense of the fight in Tolerable David, the brutality of Noah Beery and the Sea Wolf, the cruelty
Look,
of...
Look, Alec, why don't you let Bart and me sort of work it out by ourselves first?
Hmm?
Then we'll tell you how we see it, and if it's okay with you, we'll try a take.
Well, all right. Just call me when you're ready.
Fine. Come on, Bart. Let's block out the action. We begin here on the balcony when I find you coming out of Helena's room.
Yeah.
Now, you go for your gun, but before you can get it out from under you...
Tony.
Yes.
I want to thank you for keeping me on the picture.
It's all right, Bart. Now, as I was saying, when you,
I want you to know how sorry I am about Rena.
Are you really? Are you really sorry?
I sure am. Rena's one of the greatest...
Then you'll be happy to know that she did not kill Korsakov.
No? Then, who did?
Why, you did, Malloy. You killed him.
What? You must be out of your mind. What would I want
you
to...
You killed him. And then you framed Rena. You did it for revenge. To get back at me.
You're talking like a maniac.
What about the clothes that dropped out of your pocket onto the...
Korsakov had clothes, too. They were by the samovar.
That does it. You were there, Malloy, weren't you? And you killed him.
Try and prove it.
I won't have to prove it. You're going to admit it.
I am, huh?
That's right. I am going to beat the truth out of you right now.
Keep away from me, Kendall. Keep away,
I'm going to...
Hey, Mr. Benson, look!
Oh, for the love of...
Wait a minute, Tony. Hold it, boys, until we can...
Hold it, Mr. Benson. Oh, wow! What a thrill, isn't it?
Well, what are you standing there for? Let's get it on film. Lights! Larry, Paul, stop cranking those cameras.
All right, you guys. You heard Mr. Benson. Let's hammer.
That's fine, Brock. Slam the sit against that pillar. Now, bring one up, Tony. Bring it up from your heels. That's the idea. A real haymaker.
You did it, didn't you, my lord?
You killed me.
Get your hands up my throat. Can't breathe.
Now, tell me the truth, my lord. Give it to me straight, or I will kill you right here and now.
Go a little easy on that strangle, Tony. The censors in Iowa may squawk about it.
Come on, Malloy. This is your last chance.
Yes, I did it. All right. Cut. Save those lights.
Now, look. I realize I'm only the director around here. But even so, would you mind letting me in on...
Tell him, Malloy. Tell him, or I'll...
I killed Kosakoff.
All right. Call Marty Kay, will you? Tell him we've got his killer for him. You better have a couple of the boys keep an eye on Malloy until he gets here.
What are you going to do?
Me? I'm going over and get my girl out of the jailhouse.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, a story out of the Hollywood of the 20s, the city that was. As you know, Rena and Tony Kendall are still one of the film capital's happiest couples. As a matter of fact, I had tea with them last week. Rena served from a great brass samovar, and I had my choice of sugar and cream and rum, of course. And then there were little china bowls filled with slivers of lemon peel and dried rose petals and sticks of cinnamon. But do you know something strange? There weren't any clothes.
Suspense.
You have been listening to The City That Was, written for Suspense by Richard Weil. In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of suspense. Americans want peace and world friendship, and one of the most effective ways to achieve this ideal is to form personal, international friendships. To people all over the world, the United States is a land of wonder. They want to know more about us, how we live, what our homes and schools are like, what we do in our leisure time. Well, these people are anxious to correspond with you to become international pen friends. You can enrich your life and make a new friend for yourself and your country by striking up a correspondence with someone overseas. So, if you're between 16 and 60, drop a note giving your name, address, age, and a few facts about yourself to Letters Abroad, 45 East 65th Street, New York, 21, New York. Enclose a self-address stamped envelope. And that address again is Letters Abroad, 45 East 65th Street, New York, 21, New York. Heard in tonight's story were House Jameson as the narrator, Michael Caine as Bart Malloy, Martha Greenhouse as Rena, Bernard Grant as Kendall, and also included in the cast were Danny Occo, Sam Raskin, and George Petrie. Listen again next week, when we return with The Green Lorelei by George Bamber. Another tale well calculated to keep you in...
At Suspense, The City That Was from 1960. Now we're going to have a little crime talk, and it's going to be the Black Museum. This one hosted by Orson Welles, it's called The Silencer, and it's number 41 in the series.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide. were everyday objects. A woman's purse, a man's glove, a child's shoe. All are touched by murder. Now, this silencer was made to fit an army rifle, made for a killer, for striking unseen and unheard. In the dark, perhaps. Interesting little instrument, a scientific gadget to absorb sound, to change a sharp, cracking report into a muffled gasp.
I suppose I'm being rather subjective about this, Sergeant, but I find myself hating that silencer.
Yes, I understand how you feel, Inspector. A silencer, well, it's filthy, isn't it? It's something like a rattlesnake.
No, Sergeant, your simile's wrong. A rattlesnake gives warning before he strikes. He plays fair.
Today, that silencer can be seen here in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear the Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Well, here we are, in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Here lies death, violent death. In many guises, the long history of a great number of very murderous deeds. On the shelves, on the tables, in the very air itself. Now, this elephant gun here, this was once used for hunting by a sportsman bred in the very best traditions. Later used to shoot a friend in the back. Ah, here we are, a silencer. Metal tubes within tubes, small and stubby, designed to swallow sound. It was a weapon, too, of course, but no one thought of a weapon or of a silencer the night Herbert and Josie Martin returned from a party to their new home in the equally new residential development in the suburbs of London.
Oh, it was a fine party, Josie, but I don't mind telling you I'm dead for sleep.
Oh, yes. Oh, I like the new neighbors, but business days and no time for housewarming.
At the rate these new houses are renting, we'll be going to house parties for weeks on end. Might as well make up our minds to it.
A man and his wife, tired in a pleasant sort of way, pleased at meeting their new neighbors and preparing for sleep. Normal, quiet, nice people in a new home. Nothing spectacular. No hint of headlines. No thought of death.
Sure the doors are locked, Herbert?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Oh, dear, please pull down the blind, because if it blows up during the night, it'll flap out the window and wake us, like last night.
Oh, all right. If you didn't insist on opening the windows from the top, Josie, the blinds wouldn't blow.
Herbert! Herbert, what is it? Herbert, what is it? What's taking you? Oh! Oh!
A man reaches up to pull down a window blind. The lighted lamp is behind him. A bullet stars the windowpane. The man is dead. A short while later, a telephone rings in an office in Scotland Yard.
Inspector Foster here.
Sergeant Williams speaking, sir. There's a call come through from Hempstead Oval. Herbert Martin, shot as he was pulling down the blind in his bedroom.
Anyone with him?
Yeah, his wife, sir.
Any other witnesses?
No, sir, not at the moment.
Very well, Williams. Bring a car round and we'll have a look at the situation. I realize this has been a terrible shock, Mrs. Martin, but we need your help at once.
Oh, anything, Inspector. Anything at all.
Did your husband have any enemies that you know of?
Oh, no, no one. No one.
Any trouble in his business?
No, nothing, no.
What was his business?
Insurance. Accident, mostly. Things were going on so well, that's how we could afford to move out here.
Then you've only come here recently?
3 months ago. We were one of the first tenants. It seemed such a nice place. Everything's so new.
Questions and more questions. But there was obviously nothing Mrs. Martin could tell the inspector. All she knew was what she'd seen. One point puzzled him. The inspector came back to it several times.
And you're certain, Mrs. Martin, that you heard no shot?
No, nothing. Just the sort of noise of the glass. And then
Herbert fell. Well, it's possible, sir. At extreme range, the sound of a shot might have followed the arrival of the bullet.
Mrs. Martin?
No, I'm sure. I'd have noticed. I thought it seemed so strange. There wasn't any sound. Just the hole in the window and my husband sort of crumpling up and falling.
Well, that's not much to go on. Perhaps the bullet will tell us something. Meanwhile, we'll do our best, Mrs. Martin. We'll try to do our best.
There was very little for the police to start on. A close scrutiny of Herbert Martin's life brought nothing to light. Martin's manner of living, the conduct of his business were exemplary. His friends, his business associates, his new neighbors, all had nothing but praise for Herbert Martin. Death had come out of the dark. This alone was ground for speculation, particularly among the neighbors. Sidney and Elizabeth Davis, brother and sister, were no exceptions.
I can't help but think, Sidney, it's so peaceful here. And that poor man, barely in his grave. Well, it is pleasant. Well, it would be if it... only... Do you suppose his poor wife will keep the house now?
I doubt it. But perhaps if you offered to help her, Elizabeth...
Well, I have. It will take her quite a while to make up her mind.
I see.
You see, she's all alone, poor soul. Sidney, I can't help but wonder... You know,
what? What is it, Elizabeth?
I had the strangest twinges.
What?
It's sharp. Oh, Sidney.
Elizabeth.
Oh, help me. Help me.
Elizabeth.
Death had come to Hempstead Oval once again.
And you're absolutely sure you heard no shot, Mr. Davis?
Absolutely, Inspector. One moment my sister was speaking to me about Mrs. Martin. The next moment she was dying in my arms. There was no sound, only the blood.
I see. Mr. Davis, do you know the people who live in this development?
Nearly all of them. We felt rather like pioneers, I suppose, with the development being so new. We all became friendly.
And perhaps you can tell me, are there any ex-servicemen living here?
Yes, there are two. Nice chaps, wives and children, you know. May I ask why you inquire?
Because the bullet which killed Mr. Martin came from an Army-issue rifle, and I suspect the same thing will be found true in your sister's case. If it is true, we'll have that much at least to go on.
More, the markings on both bullets were identical. The same weapon had been used. Inspector Foster sent Detective Sergeant Williams visiting.
Yes?
Are you Thomas Larkin?
I am.
Excuse me, sir. I'm Detective Sergeant Williams, CID. Here are my credentials.
Oh, come in, Sergeant. Will you come into the living room?
I'll only keep you a moment, Mr. Larkin. I want to speak about the Martin and Davis murders.
Yes, of course.
Do you happen to have a rifle in your possession, sir?
No, I gave all that up when I was discharged. If I never see a weapon again, it'll be too soon.
I believe your husband is an ex-serviceman, Mrs. Goodson.
Yes, he is. 5 years of service, 8th Army, under General Montgomery.
I see. Now, tell me, did he by any chance retain any weapon when he left the service?
No.
Is there any weapon in your house that you know of?
Yes.
Oh.
A Webley.
Oh, really?
Well, frankly, my husband insists we keep it. He's got a license for it, but it frightens me half to death just to have it in the house, what with the children around and all. Oh, Sergeant, are all of us in danger here?
Oh, you needn't worry.
Don't you have any idea who or what may be behind these dreadful shootings?
Nothing, sir. I drew a complete blank.
I rather thought you would. Incidentally, pathology found the Davis bullet and ballistics reports it's identical with the one they recovered from Martin's body.
Well, whoever he is, he's a fabulous shot, sir.
And he uses a silencer. That's the only explanation I have for the absence of sound.
Not very much to go on.
Inspector Foster here.
This is Mrs. Thomas Larkin, Inspector. My husband and I live on Hempstead Oval.
Yes, Mrs. Larkin, I know. What can I do for you?
Well, Mr. Larkin and I have called a meeting at our house for this evening. We hoped you and Sergeant Williams could be with us.
What's the purpose of your meeting, ma'am?
Oh, the entire development is living in fear, Inspector. We want to try to find some way to protect ourselves. We thought you might have some advice to offer.
I'm somewhat doubtful about the advice, Mrs. Larkin. But Sergeant Williams and I will be at your meeting. Have you set a time for it as yet?
They came that evening to the Larkin living room. Inspector Foster waited in the hallway with the Larkins.
Is everyone here, Mr. Larkin?
I think so, sir.
Mr. Munden said he'd be over. His wife wanted to stay with their little boy.
Well, he's the only one missing, then.
Yes, that's right.
How did you reach these people? By telephone?
It's not much trouble to do that. We're all on party lines.
I see.
Someone's at the back door, Tom.
Must be Munden. I'll get it.
If you'll excuse me, Mrs. Larkin.
Yes, of course. Go ahead, Inspector.
Funny, coming to the back door. I told his wife particularly about the front door and the precautions.
No matter. At least I don't believe it will matter.
Here we are. Hello, Munden. Glad you could make it.
Sorry, I'm late, Larkin. I rather thought the back way would present less opportunity for this unknown marksman to...
Munden, good grief. Shut that door, Larkin. You're a perfect target yourself standing there.
Today, that silencer can be seen here in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. We continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Neighbor Munden was dead, the rifle bullet neatly placed in the back of his head. The silent marksman was another story entirely. Who he was, where he was, why he struck, were the unanswered questions which Inspector Foster had to face as he stood before the terror-stricken residents of Hempstead Oval.
All I can say is that the police are doing anything and everything to find this killer.
And in the meantime, Inspector?
I'll answer that. In the meantime, we can all be picked off as my sister was, or Martin, or Munden. Oh,
yes, he's right, Inspector. I, for one, won't leave my children open to the risk of being orphaned or worse.
No. Oh, no.
Moving away, giving up your homes, won't find a murderer. I'm asking you, all of you, to do something quite difficult under present circumstances. I want you to stay here for another few days. Be patient. Remain indoors at night. Stay away from doors and windows. If it's possible to find him, and that is always possible, we'll do it. I promise you this, that the entire machinery of the London...
They watched him, the good neighbors of Hampstead Oval, with doubt and fear in their eyes. But they did as Inspector Foster asked. They stayed in their homes and waited. The welcome light of morning found the inspector and his sergeant with Tom Larkin in the kitchen of his home.
You're about the same height as Munden, aren't you, Larkin?
Just about.
Good. Sergeant?
Yes, sir?
Set up the transit here where Munden was standing when he was hit and adjust its height to Mr. Larkin.
Very good, sir.
A surveyor's transit in my kitchen? I don't understand, Inspector.
You will shortly. Almost ready, Sergeant?
Yes.
The men worked quickly, methodically. The transit was set up, the lens of its telescope facing the open back door. Inspector Foster adjusted the eyepiece and then slowly scanned from lintel to lintel through the open doorway. Back he moved the instrument, adjusting it vertically as well as horizontally, turning the brass thumb screw carefully, precisely. He stepped away from the transit.
That seems to be the best possibility, Sergeant. See for yourself.
Thank you, sir. Yes, it lines up well. The angle seems to be about right.
Shall we have a look at it?
Yes.
Care to come with us, Larkin?
Yes, I would.
There's a tree out there with a clear line of fire right through your back door. The distance seems to be about 500 yards.
So that's what the transit was for.
Exactly. Let's go, shall we? Too bad it's been so dry lately. There might have been footprints.
Marks on the tree trunk, sir.
Where?
Here. Look, notice the scraping on this bark, sir. As if someone in heavy boots had climbed the tree, and it's recent, too.
Here for a boost up, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. All right. Hey, there are more marks up here, sir. Quite a comfortable perch. Hello, the limb forks here. Scratches on the bark. Could have been a rifle rested here.
Very good. Come on down, Sergeant.
All right.
Inspector, I may have found something over here, under this branch.
Don't touch anything, Larkin.
Right here, look. In the weeds. Looks like a rifle cartridge to me. Brass. The sun caught it.
Good man. Good eyesight. Take care of that, Sergeant.
All right, sir.
Once we find the rifle and its owner, that bit of brass may well send him up 13 steps early one morning.
Starting from nothing, the facts were coming together one by one. In the quiet office at the yard.
The boot marks on the tree trunk, Sergeant. They were rather close to the ground. I noticed your first jump was at least 2 feet higher.
Yes, I wasn't carrying a rifle, sir.
No, but a man of average weight in good condition would have made markings closer to yours. I'd say this fellow was either very heavy or not exactly young. Or past middle age, at least.
The beginnings of a description.
Either military or hunting experience to be able to shoot like that at night.
The beginnings of a background.
Whoever it was must have lived in that area for some time to know the position of that tree in relation to Larkin's back door. Start a quiet house-to-house check, Williams.
Very good, sir.
Have the men watch for anyone who fits these points.
Yes, sir.
Then find me a detailed ordnance map of Hampstead Oval. The builder or the renting agent will have one. We found one sniper's perch. I'm curious about the other. Interesting layout, architecturally.
Mm.
According to the contour of the land, the main line of the houses seems to curve round this rise just off center.
It must have been quite a place in the old days.
Oh?
The builder, tell me. An estate sold for taxes. Family named, Wardman. Old line. The grant went back nearly to the first Queen Elizabeth.
History. Fascinating. Any more?
Yes, quite a talkative fellow. Seems the land was sold on condition that the sole survivor of the family be given a house rent-free for the rest of his life.
And this person is still there?
Seems to be. He's an elderly gentleman. Keeps very much to himself. This is his house here on the end of the main line.
I see. Now then, this would be the Martin place and this the Davis.
Yeah, that's right, sir.
The Martin bedroom and the Davis porch face the same way along that curve of the hill.
Yes, that's it, sir.
It seems they didn't originally intend to build on the hill, but they've started a new house right here. The fellow sketched it in for me. The demand's been very high. Wouldn't mind living there myself.
After we get this killer, eh, Sergeant?
Oh, yes, sir, after.
Pass me that ruler, will you?
All right.
Thank you. See here, Williams. The Martin window and the Davis porch are in direct, clear line with the new building. I wonder now. I assume the contractor isn't working his men at night. I wonder now.
This is the top floor, Inspector. Hardwood isn't in yet, but that floor will take your weight. That's the dormer window you asked about.
Look around, will you, Sergeant?
Very good, sir.
About the progress of this building.
Yes, sir.
How long has this top floor been in this half-finished state?
About a fortnight, sir. Glaziers are due end of this week. Carpenters will get the flooring right after that.
Anyone here at night?
Yes, there's a watchman for the old development. One of his stations is just across the road. You can see it through the window. There.
I see.
I have them, sir. Here. They were lying along the wall, under the window.
Now, who'll do this? Tenpenny nails in the windowsill. Someone will catch it for this.
No doubt someone will. Someone put those nails in to help steady a rifle. The same someone who left those two brass cartridge cases behind him.
How do you catch a killer who strikes silently in the darkness? How do you match his craftiness? Perhaps you say to Tom Larkin...
That may be dangerous, Larkin. Will you cooperate?
Oh, I've been under fire before now, Inspector.
Very well. Now then, I believe someone told me the telephones hereabouts are on party line.
A telephone call is made on the party line.
I want to talk to you, Goodson, about this killer. I think I know who it is. I'll walk over in half hour with a friend of mine, and I'm picking up Sid Davis on the way.
No mention, of course, that the friend is Sergeant Williams, CID, who will walk alongside Tom Larkin, staying between him and the new house on the hill. No mention of the inspector crouched on the hillside in the dark shadow of the half-built house.
Sorry, you are certain the men know the orders, Mason?
Yes, sir. Let anyone into the cordon, but no one gets out, except the watchman.
Very good. Now, let's see. Yes. Time Williams and Larkin were starting the walk. Let me have the glasses, Mason.
Through the night glasses, the inspector watched. Almost half a mile away, two men left the Larkin house, started slowly along the road. On the hillside, a shadow slipped quietly toward the half-finished house. The inspector whispered.
Hear that? Not a sound now.
Unsuspecting, a shadow moved through the line of police, past the hidden inspector, into the building.
Come along, Mason. He's gone into the house.
Into the empty building. Empty, except for a killer. Climbing steadily. No lights. Only the vague outline of the unpainted banister. And the clean smell of new wood. Suddenly, the footsteps ahead stop. The inspector and his companion pause at the head of the stairway. The glassless window shows the night sky, bright with stars. A black shadow kneels at the sill, places a long, heavy object between the two tenpenny nails.
All right, Mason, take him.
Hey, sir. Oh. I said, no. No, hey, you shan't take me. No, I have a right here. Better than anyone. I have a right.
You're being taken in charge for murder. I must warn you that anything you say may be taken down in writing.
Never mind, Mason. He doesn't understand.
Yes, sir.
You're Philip Wardman, aren't you?
I am. Who are you? You seem to be a gentleman.
My name's Foster. Why are you here in this empty building, Mr. Wardman?
I have a right. This is my land. My family's land. They told me when I sold it for the money I could go on living here. I built houses, brought strangers. I'm driving them out. I'm hunting them out, as I hunted in Africa. And you were a boy. But no right. They came to live on my land. Trespassers, there's a law.
There's a law, too, Mr. Wardman, about rifles like this. And silencers.
Silencers. I'm a good shot. Pick them off like quail.
Send me the silencer. Supposed to spoil the accuracy of a rifle. But not mine. I'm good. Won trophies. When I was younger, I never knew. I never knew.
All right, take him downstairs. You were an excellent shot, Mr. Wardman. Even with a silencer.
And today that silencer can be seen in its place here in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment. Person is Orson Welles.
It's true, of course, that in many countries, men have loved their land to the point of desperation. Philip Wardman loved his to the point of madness and murder. The rifle belonged to his grandson, a veteran living far away in Canada. Where the old man bought the silencer was never learned. The secret of that went with Philip Wardman to the place where his bitter, lonely life drew to its close. The silencer itself remains in its usual place in the Black Museum. Now, until we meet next time, I'll tell you another story about the Black Museum. I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Well, that's our allotted 60 minutes for this week. We'll be back next time with more great old-time radio. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.